This is Digital Story Podcast number 960, August 13th, 2024. Today's theme is Rooftop Camping and Nimble Photography. I'm Derek Story. As I wandered through the campground during my latest outing, I noticed some very impressive encampments that I'm sure required plenty of manpower to set up. Being the nimble photographer that I am, I prefer a lighter touch, which leaves me more time for photography and campfire gazing. In this week's show, I talk about the Tent Box Go, RTT, rollout awnings, portable fire rings, and more. Time saved in camp leads to more photography. I hope you enjoy the show. I'm going to break this feature into two parts. I'll lead off with the camping setup, including a picture in the show notes so you can see exactly what I'm talking about. And then I'll discuss the photography rig that I used in camp and on trail, and the two do go hand in hand. But first I want to talk about the camp setup. And it's funny, since I've been back from the last camping trip, I've been hanging out with my sister and my brother-in-law, who are also avid campers and who go all over the place. They're both retired, and so they have plenty of time to camp, and they go at least once a month. And so we're talking about, you know, the different styles that people have, their personal style, what they like, what they see other people doing, all that good stuff. And I think it depends on what you want to get out of your experience. For example, when they go camping, it is a total getaway situation for them. They're going to get some exercise, to relax, to enjoy nature, you know, all that kind of stuff. And all of those things are on my list as well, I have to say, you know, but I have the added dimension of wanting to get some photography, right? I mean, this is my opportunity to get out in a new environment, see new things, test new equipment, and have fun with my camera gear, and hopefully come home with some great pictures. So when I think about camping for me, I'm not only thinking about the camping experience itself, but I'm also thinking about how can I shape that experience so that it works and contributes to my photography. So I'm thinking about all of this at once. By the way, this is really fun stuff to think about. There's no labor here that I don't like. I enjoy it all. So over the years, I've really been thinking about, you know, how can I improve my camping experience so that I'm fresher, I have more energy for my photography. And there's a bit of an interesting story here, and I hope you'll indulge me and let me backtrack just a bit before we get to the rooftop tent that I'm ultimately going to bring you to. I'm going to bring you right to the tent door entrance. For many years, I've been backpacking and camping since I was 11 years old. And for many years, when I was a lot younger than I am right now, I was absolutely fine with rolling out, you know, a ground cloth and then some closed foam, you know, roll up, Insulite, whatever we used to call it then, and then my bag on top. And that was my sleeping arrangement. And I have to tell you that even in my younger days, I didn't sleep that great. I mean, part of it is, I think for me anyway, when you're young, you just sort of go, this is just the way it is, right? You know, you're not going to sleep all the way through the night. You're going to wake up a few times. You're going to be cold here and there. Sometimes you're going to get wet, you know, all that kind of stuff. And eventually, I got a tent, a very nice little tent. They call them a two-man tent, but for me, a two-man tent is a one-man tent, right? That means that there's plenty of room for me and not much room for anyone else, because I like to spread out. I like to have some stuff in the tent with me and, you know, all of that. I got a nice little tent, a nice little REI tent, but I was still on the ground, right? So even though I had a nice tent, so I was a little bit warmer at night, so I had more protection from the elements, from the rain and so forth. I was still on a pad in a sleeping bag, and I was still waking up over and over again. And I remember one morning in particular, a number of years ago, I was in the Eastern Sierra. It was in October. I was there to shoot fall color. And, you know, this is one of my favorite places to go to take pictures of fall color. And I woke up one morning early, like 5 a.m, and the ground was just as hard as a glacier. It was so hard and cold. The air was very cold. And I sort of crawled out of my tent and I go, man, that is uncomfortable. He just said, that is uncomfortable. And I said right then, that morning, that I am going to find a better way to camp. I'm going to find a more comfortable way to camp because this just isn't it for me anymore. And sure enough, about 3 months later, I stumbled into the Vanagon that some of you know about that had a sleeper bed inside, had a table inside. They called it a weekender package, and I could afford it. And the guy sold it to me for a very good price. And suddenly my whole camping life changed. I had a bed, I had screens on the windows, I had a table. I could just hang out inside the Vanagon until I was ready to go outside and I was sleeping on a nice bed. Oh my gosh. I mean, it was wonderful. I was living the great camping life for this period of time. The only problem was Vanagons aren't made anymore. Mine was a 1990 Vanagon, and they get tired. And unless you can put, you know, the ample amount of money into them that they require, you can't go up over high 11,000 foot passes anymore and go on extended trips and use them for workshops and all those things that I wanted to do. And so even though I loved that van, I loved it for camping, I had to let it go. I had to let it go because I couldn't depend on it anymore, and I didn't want to invest the money in it that I thought I should. Plus, I wanted to move to something that was a bit more efficient, that got more than 16 miles per gallon. So then I got the VW ID4, the electric car. It's an SUV, and it is fantastic. I love it. And suddenly I was reinvigorated for camping. I set it up on the inside so I could sleep on the inside. It had a panoramic roof on top so I could look at the stars at night. I had screens for the windows. It was really great. The only problem with camping inside the ID4 was that I had to move stuff around constantly, because when I wanted to sleep, all that stuff that was there in the cargo area had to be moved somewhere else. And I was just always shuffling stuff around, shuffling. So even though I slept better at night than I would in the tent, and just as well practically as I did in the Vanagon, it wasn't as convenient because I just always felt like I was a man in motion. You know, okay, now I want to lay down and take a nap. Okay, well, I got to move this. This has got to go over here. I got to keep this dry, you know, all that kind of stuff. The problem wasn't completely solved yet. I didn't have both a dependable vehicle and a great sleeping arrangement. I had a good sleeping arrangement, but it wasn't perfect. Then I learned about rooftop tents. And if you haven't seen these, if you're not a camper, they're fascinating. They're really interesting. And when you first look at them, you go, nah, this can't work, right? It's like one of those things. This can't work. Because what it is that, you know, we have roof racks on top of our SUVs or, you know, whatever we happen to be driving. You have a roof rack up there, and then you mount a tent that pops up on top of the roof rack. So when you're driving, when you're going from point A to point B, the tent is collapsed. It's like a wedge And in the case of mine, it's only 18 inches tall from the bottom of the roof rack. So it collapses very, very compactly. And then when you get to wherever you're going, the tent pops up, right? You pop it up, and in the case of the Tent Box Go, which I'm using, it goes up to about 50 inches or so on the tall end. It's still a wedge, and then it kind of slopes down to where your feet are when you're sleeping. It's not quite as high. So it pops up with enough room for two people, which means enough room for me. Enough room for two people, windows and doors on all sides, and then even a screened skylight on top. And the way that you get to it, it comes with a collapsible ladder. So the ladder, then, you know, you pull the, you know, the, you have everything inside the rooftop tent when you're driving. So your mattress is in there, your sleeping bag, your pillows, and the collapsible ladder. And then you get to wherever you are, and you kind of, you know, unzip the side, pull out the ladder, you know, pull the ladder down, and then, you know, go up the ladder and erect the tent. And now you have an upstairs bedroom on top of your car. So what does this mean? This means not only do you have a nice dedicated place to sleep, all that stuff that's in your car stays exactly where it is. So I set up, you know, all the cooking stuff goes in the back of the car in the boot. So that's where I have the food and all those supplies. And then in the middle of the car, I have the things that I'm going to be pulling out right away. You know, the camp chair, the camp table, the fire ring, all that good stuff. That comes out right away in the middle of the car. And when I want to do some cooking or whatever, I just pop up the back of the car, you know, grab what I need. And it just stays there. It just stays there. I don't have to move it around when it's bedtime. I don't have to mess with anything. So it's far more convenient, right, than having to move everything around when it's time to go to bed. So now that you have an overview of what a rooftop tent is, I'm going to give you a little bit more detail about, because all sorts of questions come up from people about these things, like, you know, how do they work? How do they affect your mileage? You know, all that sort of stuff. So let's go into a little bit about this. So first of all, let's talk about weight, right? So how much weight can your roof rack support? Well, that varies from roof rack to roof rack. It's not easy to say, you know, especially in succession. But generally speaking, they hold 165 pounds of dynamic weight. And this is an important distinction when you start putting things on top of your car. There's dynamic weight and there's static weight. Dynamic weight is the limit, the weight limit that you can have on these racks while you're driving. While you're driving, you can have, in my case, up to 165 pounds on top of the car while you're driving. When it's static, when you're parked, it can hold a lot more. And the weight limitation for the tent I have is over 600 pounds. And I'm sure that the car could sustain even more than that. And especially when you think about that, this weight is distributed over the racks, right? So it's distributed over like a 7-foot area. The static weight can be really as much as, I doubt anyone would ever hit the limit of it, especially with a rooftop tent. But what you have to think about in terms of the tent, and then in my case, I also put a rollout awning, a patio awning on the rooftop, is how much dynamic weight are you using up? And then how does that configuration affect your mileage? In the case of the Tent Box Go, it is 73 pounds. It is the lightest rooftop tent right now. And how they did that was very interesting, because instead of having a solid surface that mounts to the racks for the base, they went to a frame with a trampoline-like surface. And this trampoline surface is, you know, secured with a number of spots with straps that you can pull to tighten them, and they stay that way. And so the weight reduction is ginormous. It cuts the weight in half right there, having that trampoline instead of a hard base. The other advantage is that the trampoline is very comfortable to sleep on because you have a trampoline that gives a little bit, yet it's firm. It's firm, yet it gives. And then on top of that, you can put a mattress that is both closed foam but also is inflatable. And these combo mattresses are really comfortable. I love them a lot. So you have already a decent sleeping surface with a trampoline, and then you put that mattress on top, and you have an excellent sleeping surface. And I'm talking about sleeping on your side, sleeping on your back, sleeping any way that you want to sleep. And it's very comfortable. I mean, super comfortable, yet it's light. It doesn't weigh a whole lot. And then the rest of the tent is nothing but a tubular frame. That's very strong, but yet doesn't weigh very much. Sort of like, the bones of a bird. The bones are hollow so that it reduces the weight. So you have a tubular frame, and then the tent itself, well, we know how much tents weigh. They don't weigh very much at all. So then that's it. So they are able to create an entire living area for very little weight at all. And then, of course, it has to be able to be raised up so that you have enough room so it's comfortable when you're in there, but yet compact enough so that when it's on top of your car, you can get through the garage door, right? So you can store it inside the garage and things like that. The weight is very important, but it's not what you would think. And so when the tent is up and I crawl up the ladder and I flop onto the trampoline, the car doesn't care. I mean, I weigh 238 pounds and I'm 6'7" in height, and the weight made no difference at all up there. The racks can support it, the car can support it, and all that sort of stuff. There's no issue there. And the tent's long enough so I could lay stretched out inside the tent and not have to bend my knees at all. I can be perfectly stretched out and sleep in any position that I want. Weight is important in the sense that you have to have some sort of setup that is within the requirements or the limits of your roof racks, but at the same time, in my opinion, not add any more weight than necessary to the weight of the vehicle itself. And that's why I selected the Tent Box Go, because it is so light, but yet it has the room that I want in a sleeping area for when I'm camping. The main thing to remember is the difference between static weight and dynamic weight, and you need to know what the dynamic weight is for your mounting system, your roof racks, so that you don't exceed that. The specs on the inside area of the tent itself: 50 inches wide, 90 inches long, and the height is 45 inches when opened, and then when collapsed, it goes down to 18 inches, and it fits inside both of my garages, both at work and at home. Now let's get to the aerodynamics, because this is the other question I've been asked a lot about. Especially people with electric cars, they're very curious, how does this affect your mileage? In fact, when I was driving on Highway 1 back from Gulala, where I was camping, they're doing some road construction. I was first in line, and the flagman there, as soon as he flagged me to a stop to wait for our turn to go, he almost ran over to the car because he owns a Tesla. He's been thinking about getting one of these, and he wanted to know, how does this affect my mileage? I have some good news for you, because I've been studying this for a couple weeks, taking notes, and I have plenty of data. Because the tent sits on top of the racks, and then the racks are up from the roof itself, then the airflow for the car is basically undisturbed. In other words, the airflow for the car, as it was designed, continues to be able to operate. It's flowing up over the windshield, along the roof, it comes down the back, and then, of course, on the sides as well. and the tent does not interrupt that airflow at all. And I was banking on this, you know, making the mileage hit be as little as possible. And as it works out, it is very little up to a certain speed. So if I'm going 65 miles or less, I take no hit. I take no hit on my mileage. My mileage on the ID4 is 3.3 miles per kilowatt. That's my average mileage for this electric car. When I have the tent, when I have the pull-out awning mounted up there, and then when the car is full of camping gear, I'm still at 3.3 miles per kilowatt. In fact, I'm a little bit more because I'm driving on back roads, and so I'm not going as fast. So it actually went up to as high as 3.7 on my camping trip, 3.7 miles per kilowatt, which is just crazy with all that stuff up there. However, if I go on the freeway and I start going 75, 77 miles an hour, then that's when I take the hit. So there's something that happens aerodynamically, and I don't understand enough about the physics of this to understand exactly what's happening, but I have the measurements to know what will happen. And what happens is if I'm going 78 miles an hour with the same setup down the freeway, my mileage will go from 3.3 miles per kilowatt down to 2.8. So I will take a hit once I start going in the mid 70s or higher miles per hour. If I keep it to 70 miles an hour or below, it's virtually no hit at all. Unless there's other, you know, conditions of a strong headwind or, you know, other things. But I'm talking about all things being equal. If I keep it to 68 miles an hour, 69 miles an hour, virtually no hit at all. So this is important, especially for electric car drivers, but also for gas car drivers, that you can have this essentially extra room on top of your car, a sleeping area, and you won't pay a price for your mileage as long as you're driving at a reasonable speed. As long as you keep it down and don't start racing up the freeway, you'll be in good shape. This surprised the heck out of me. I was hoping for something like this, but thank goodness. Now, just so you know, I have all of this in the show notes. All this information I'm talking about is in the show notes. So you don't have to take notes or anything like that. I have the links to everything in the show notes as well. Just to put a bow on the rooftop tent, it is comfortable. These are the best night's sleep I've ever had camping, ever. You know, it is super comfortable. I can close the side doors. Every door or window has a screen on it, but I can close the side doors all the way around, so I have privacy. And then it has a skylight, a screen skylight, so I can leave that open, look at the sky, look at the stars, look at the trees, all that stuff. It has ventilation at both ends of the tent also, that those vents you can open or close. And so you have ventilation running long ways. And then if you're able to have the skylight open, you have additional ventilation that way. So I had no condensation at all to deal with. I had fresh air all night, but yet I was comfortable, I was warm, and you know, sleeping on that foam on top of the trampoline was just wonderful. I haven't taken a mileage hit with it, and in fact, one little additional thing, having the rooftop tent up there all the time, when it's really hot, it's like a hat. I have a built-in umbrella on top of the car to keep the top of the car shaded, which is something I hadn't anticipated, but it's really, really wonderful. There'll be more about this. I'm working on a detailed review that gets deeper into the weeds, and that'll be published on the Digital Story. I'll mention it on the podcast when it's published, if you want more information. I should have that ready to go in about a week or so. And so hopefully I'll be able to announce it on next week's podcast so that I have that review ready to go. It is a huge thumbs up for me. The last thing that you're probably wondering, well, how much do these things cost? They're not cheap. I'll tell you right now, the Tent Box Go is $1,100. They have a 10% discount right now. It's $1,100. And then the mattress is another $129. I highly recommend getting the mattress because it is fabulous. It's tailored to the inside of the tent, so it just goes wall to wall in every direction, and you just leave it in there all the time. It just becomes part of the tent. So I highly recommend it. So it's not cheap. If you think about, though, how much it costs to stay in a room on the road, and if this can replace that at all, which it will in my case, you know, I'm going to be using it for all sorts of things, then I think you start to get your money back, maybe even after the first season, probably definitely after the second season. But that initial hit, I will tell you, is painful. That initial, you know, upfront cost, depending on how much you do this, how much comfort means to you, if you can use it in other scenarios, then you can decide if the money is worth it or not. Now, I want to talk about just a couple other things that just really made the experience so much better in camp. And again, there'll be a picture in the show notes, and there's links to all this in the show notes as well. But I think an awning coming off the side of the car really changes the outdoor environment. You know, we've been talking about the tent, that's your indoor environment for sleeping. But when you're hanging around outside, sitting outside, having an awning just suddenly makes everything more homey, more comfortable, more civilized. You can hang lights from it. It feels like a hug, you know, when I'm camping. So I'm a big fan of awnings. And the way they work is they also mount on the roof rack. So, and there's room, the tent box is designed so you can have an awning with it. They go side by side and actually kind of tucks under the tent box a little bit. And I use a Yakima Slim Shady, and it's a 6.5 foot. They have different sizes, but I use a 6.5 foot. And it's a lightweight roof mounted awning that pulls out from the side of the car, has a couple poles, it has a frame that you put together. It weighs 29 pounds and it provides 42 square feet of covered patio space, and it just changes everything. So when I set up camp, you know, I set up the tent, I pull out the awning, put my chair, my little camp table, everything underneath it, string some lights on it, and that is the first stage of setting up the camp. And I can do both of those things in about 30 minutes. It's crazy how fast the tent sets up, because you're just really raising it up and attaching two poles. And then the awning is, you know, another 20 minutes or so. And I'm a huge fan of these awnings, because when I started using it, I just enjoyed sitting around in camp more. I just felt more comfortable. And then there was the added thing that I didn't anticipate. The awning comes out from the side of the tent, right? They're both attached to the roof of the car. So I have the ladder on the driver's side and the awning coming off the passenger side. And so the passenger side of the car is facing my camp. So the car kind of is a barrier to the outside world. But when I open the window in the tent on that side, suddenly I have a patio there. A patio, that's the top of the awning, is just right there like a patio. So when I get inside my tent at night, I can take off my shoes, because I need to have my shoes on to go up the ladder. I take off my shoes and I can just set them outside on top of the awning cover and not have to have them inside the tent. So that was this kind of a fun little thing. And by the way, you're thinking about the ladder. How far up do I have to go? I have to go up 4 rungs, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then I just roll right into the tent itself. It's very easy. It's not scary at all. Some people go, oh, I don't know if I can go up a ladder into the tent. Well, it's 4 rungs. And, you know, I'm a big guy and I'm not 20 anymore. And it's still no problem for me. I just wanted to mention the Slim Shady, the Yakima Slim Shady. Now that runs about $389. And again, I have the link to it. I found the best prices for all this stuff. And so there's a link to the tent, there's a link to the Slim Shady. And then the last thing that really makes the camping super enjoyable for me is a portable fire ring. And these connect to a propane tank, and I use the half-size propane tank, not the big 5-gallon one, but the smaller ones, because they're easier to store in the car. They come in a nice robust case. You just lift the fire ring out of the case. It uses lava rock. So you put lava rock in there, connect it to your tank, and then you just have on-demand fire. And it's nice fire, right? Because of the lava rock. We've all seen this. This is not rocket science. So you get the dancing flame, the whole thing, and it's really pretty. And you turn it on whenever you want. And then I have a portable grill that can set over it if I want to use it as a grill. I don't grill anything that's going to drip into the lava rock because I want to keep the lava rock clean. But I do have a frying pan that I sit on top of the grill rack, and then I do grilled cheese sandwiches, chicken tacos, things like that when I'm cooking, and it works out really well and it's fun. And you know, the other thing about having a portable fire ring, you don't have to build a whole fire, especially when you're solo camping, and you don't want to use a bunch of wood and stuff just for you. But the other thing about it is then when it gets dark, I still can stay up. I don't have to go to bed because I'm sitting there in the dark and I'm not ready to go to bed yet. So with the portable fire ring, I'll stay up to, you know, 9:30, a quarter to 10 at night. Sometimes I have my laptop on my, you know, just sitting there in my camp chair with the laptop open, working on pictures. It just really extends the evening. And then the other time I really like it is first thing in the morning when I'm making my coffee, fire up the fire ring. You just got a little bit of warmth right there, and it makes the morning start a lot better. By the way, for making my coffee, I use a jet boil stove. It's really a backpacking stove, but the thing about it is so compact, so light, and it boils water fast, really fast, and it's super easy to use. And that's what I use for heating up the water for my coffee, and then I do pour over coffee in the morning. And it gets my day off to a great start, having both the fire ring and the jet boil stove. So those are just some of the things. They save me a lot of time. My camp only takes a total of maybe 40 minutes, 45 minutes to set up. And then I'm free to do whatever I want. I can do whatever I want. And then when it's time to go, I don't have to start 5 hours ahead of time breaking down camp. I can break it down almost as quickly as setting it up. It takes me a little bit longer because, you know, it's funny, you drag stuff out of the car over the course of your camping trip. So there's a little bit more time to put it away, but it goes really fast. And then you're nice and compact and ready to go. Now, how does this lead to photography? Well, I have more time for photography because I'm spending less time fooling around in camp, both setting it up and maintaining it. And one of the things that I like to do photography wise is actually have my camera there with me. As soon as I have my camp chair out, the awnings up, have my little table, I put a little placemat over the table so it's a cloth surface, and then I pull out my camera. And I leave my camera out because when I'm sitting there just watching the world go by, well, the world happens to come by for a visit. So I'm able to photograph all the little critters that come by to visit camp to see if there's any food, to see what's going on. So Steller's jays, chipmunks, raccoons, you know, all that stuff, you know, that's coming by to hang out in your camp. If you have your camera sitting there ready to go, and you're just relaxing, then you just pick it up and you start taking pictures. I'm getting a lot of great shots, and especially animal portraits, without even having to go on the hike. Now, the lens that I was testing for this trip is the Nikon 28 to 400 millimeter Z-mount lens. And I've played with this lens for a little bit. I've had it for a little while. I mount it to the ZF, but I was very curious about, you know, how does it work as a one and only lens in an outdoor setting? Because I really got it for my outdoor work. I wanted to have just one lens as much as possible. I don't like changing the lens, you know, outside when the breeze is blowing and all that kind of stuff, is I don't like getting the possibility of getting dust in the camera. I don't want to lose shots because I'm changing lenses. So I thought, okay, how's this going to work? And I thought it was fascinating using the 28 to 400 millimeter. One thing that I found was that I was either at 28 millimeters or 400 millimeters for most of my shots. So either I was as wide as I could get, or I was as long as I could get. And I did use the middle focal lengths, but I was laughing at myself that it seemed like most of the time I was at one end or the other. I didn't really anticipate that, but that's certainly the way that it worked out. Now, the one thing I'll say about that lens, on the long end, it was pretty good in terms of that it gave me the reach that I needed for most of my shots. 400 millimeters was fine most of the time for my wildlife work. However, there were some times when the 28 millimeters wasn't quite wide enough. It was good for general purpose photography, but when I got into some of these big landscapes that I ran across on this last camping trip on my hike, I wanted wider. So I was carrying both the Viltrox 20 millimeter f/2.8 along with the Nikon 28 to 400 millimeter, and that combination worked really well. So the 20 millimeter, in those few situations where I needed more width, it worked well. It's very light. It didn't take up hardly any space. So I couldn't quite get it down to just one lens for everything that I wanted to do, but the two lenses worked very well, and I was still pretty happy with the setup. I was able to shoot close-ups with the 28 to 400. Obviously, I was taking wildlife portraits with the 28 to 400, and I was taking a lot of scenics. So I thought the lens looked really well. Now, when I got back to camp at night, I would then load up the pictures onto my laptop and go over them and really take a close look at how the lens performed. And I thought it performed really well. Up to 400 millimeters, it was very good. I mean, I'm pleased with the shots and the wide shots as well. So I think in terms of image quality, the lens performed well. Obviously, you're dealing with a slower aperture setup with it, you know, f4 on the wide end, f8 on the longest end. Thing about it is, though, I got this lens not to shoot low light photography, but when I'm out during the day. And so that didn't bother me. I was jacking up the ISO here and there with it, you know, when I got into, you know, shady areas and things like that. But with the ZF, I don't really think about the ISO going up much. You know, if it's up around 6,400, even 12,800, I'm not thinking about it, and I don't notice it in the pictures at all. So I think having a camera that performs at the higher ISO allows me to have a lens that's a little bit slower when I run into those, you know, more shady areas. That lens is $1,296, so it's not a cheap lens, but it's light, it's fairly compact, and you can have it. I just carry it in a LowPro top loader around my neck. I still have my backpack with, you know, my essentials, because I'm out for hours when I'm doing the day hiking on a camping trip. But I carry it in a top loader in the front of me, so I can just pull that camera out and take pictures when I need to. And it just fits in a regular top loader bag because the lens is quite compact. So all in all, I was very happy with it. I still have some more to learn about it, but the bottom line is that it was fine to hike with. The image quality is quite good. The 400 millimeter is darn good. And then the 28 millimeter is good most of the time, but sometimes I needed to go a little bit wider with the 20 millimeter Viltrox. So thumbs up on the Nikon Nikkor Z 28 to 400 millimeter VR lens. I was very pleased with it. This was my first big hike with it, and I thought it was fantastic. You can tell I just got back from a camping trip, right? And was just testing all this stuff. And I even have more to talk about, but we're out of time. But I hope this gave you a nice introduction to rooftop tent camping and the delights of traveling light with your camping gear so that you have more time for your photography. And then, of course, a little bit about that extended zoom lens that I thought was a lot of fun. So all in all, big thumbs up on all of this. Like I said, there's going to be detailed reports coming out on the Digital Story, and I'll point you to them as they are published. All right, stick care of a little virtual camera club business. I want to start out with a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. Drew came on the Zoom calls for our first session of the inkjet printing workshop, and he killed it. It was so much fun. What we did was I had everyone prepare a question, and then I said, have a backup question in case we have extra time. So everyone had a question, and then we would take turns just asking Drew, you know, our burning inkjet printing questions, and then he just fielded them, boom, 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 just fielded them one after another. And we did this for two sessions, both the morning session and the afternoon session. It was great, it was informative, and then I recorded it for our workshop folks so they can go back and, you know, watch it again, and then they could see the session that they didn't attend. Drew took a huge amount of time out of his day and then also his evening, because he's in Texas, to do this for us. He works out his schedule and he makes it happen. This is the kind of support that we have from Red River Paper. This is why, in addition to their great printing paper and their informative website, this is why they're so important to us. And he was able to shed light on so many things, from how printing paper is made to, you know, all the little nuances of inkjet printing that people wanted to know, and is fantastic. So a big thanks to Red River Paper, not only for being our sponsor, but for supporting this community. If you're interested in getting your inkjet printing on, click on the tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go over to Red River Paper and check out what's going on there and get your inkjet printing mojo going. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. And then finally, I want to thank our Patreon members. These folks support our community spiritually, financially, just in every way possible. If you like camaraderie, if you like hanging out with other photographers, if you want more community in your photography life, the Inner Circle is the place to be. You can learn more about it by clicking on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Nose around a bit. Sign up, and when you do, you will get an invite to our exclusive Inner Circle space that's on Derek Story Online. And a huge thanks to our members for supporting this podcast and just supporting our entire community. All right, it's going to do it for me today. I hope you enjoyed the show, working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.